Welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. Our rewatchable spinoff show on Luminary called Rewatchables 1999 is taking a little summer break, but we'll be back in the fall with more movies including Eyes Wide Shut, Never Been Kissed, and more. In the meantime, we're launching a new show on Luminary about another influential moment in 1999 called Break Stuff, the story of Woodstock 99. The pod will dive deep on the iconic music festival and how its success and failures left its mark on history. The series begins on Tuesday, July 9th, and will be coming to you every Tuesday for 8 weeks. So make sure to check out Break Stuff, the story of Woodstock 99 on Luminary.
Hello and welcome to a special emergency episode of the Ringer NBA show. I am Chris Ryan. I am joined by Kevin O'Connor. Isaac Lee is on the decks. We've had some earthquakes today in Los Angeles, so my equilibrium is a little bit off. I was in bed watching Stranger Things, and then Kawhi Leonard signed with the Clippers, and Paul George got traded to the Clippers for a massive, massive, massive haul of multiple draft picks, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari. It is a mind-blowing, league-changing, landscape-altering trade, and Kevin and I are here to break it down in as many ways as we possibly can, while also feeling completely shocked and stunned. So, Kevin, what is your first reaction to this trade?
I thought it was a fake Woj tweet when this was announced. The Clippers are sending 4 unprotected first round picks, 1 protected first round pick with 2 pick swaps and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari to get Paul George, because Kawhi Leonard targeted George and was recruiting George as the player he wanted to go to the Clippers. And George requested a trade from the Thunder, and then they got that massive haul to actually make it happen. Whoa, Chris.
So what's your instant reaction to the situation? I feel like I'm having one of those moments in the NBA where you could tell me that you were about to say anything, that this is an amazing, the Clippers are title contenders now, this is going to change the league. You could tell me that the Clippers actually gave up too much in this situation. I'm almost trying to get my mind wrapped around this.
I think it can be all of those things, but what matters most is the Clippers established themselves as one of the formidable title contenders in the league. The league is wide open, and there are many, many teams that you could make a case for that have a chance to win the title. However, the Clippers were one of the most likely teams to win the title with this pairing. Look, Paul George last year was a top 2, top 3 MVP candidate for a large portion of the season. He's one of the best defensive players in the game, playing now alongside Kawhi Leonard, also one of the best defensive players in the game. 2 guys that can create their own shot, that can play on ball or off ball. So this team has 2 superstars that are elite on defense, elite on offense, with a whole group of players still with the infrastructure that they have with Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, then Mo Harkless adding him, Landry Shamet as a shooter, a young player like Jerome Robinson, Fiondu Cabangeli, a rookie, with still they can bring back guys like Luke Bamute and Ivica Zubac. Like, this team has star power and depth, and it's very rare to have a combination like that, not just the season, but in NBA history. So for the Clippers, they may not be the favorite, but I would have them currently as the favorite in my book.
I love you, man, but it is way too early in this podcast to be talking about Landry Shamet and Ivica Zubac. We have to talk about like the star power in this trade. Okay, the Michael Jordan of the NBA right now in Kawhi Leonard has his Scottie Pippen in Paul George. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at the presumptive title favorites? Because I feel like even though they may have given up a lot here in the future, this team is going to have so much focus. I mean, we thought that George wanted to come to LA in the first place. There seems to be a certain logic to this move.
Sure. You know, that's the funny thing, is both these guys had a choice to join LeBron and they didn't, but they chose each other. Ultimately, Paul George in demanding the trade or requesting the trade, and then Kawhi with going there. Like, these guys complement each other perfectly, Chris. They can play either way. You could play either on ball or off ball. It's not usually when stars join forces, like we saw with the Miami Heat in the early 2010s, there's a little bit of overlap with skills. There was that with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade both being on ball dominant guys. We saw that with the Warriors when Kevin Durant first joined Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And there was a system fit issue for KD after years of being the ball dominant guy that he was, playing in an offense that moves the ball freely. With these two, Kawhi and Paul George, I don't think there's going to be much of that adjustment. Paul George has been the guy in Indiana. He has been the guy in Oklahoma City playing alongside another ball dominant guy in Russell Westbrook. And then for Kawhi, his whole life and his whole career with the Spurs growing into his role, playing in an offense that moved the ball and then becoming the guy later in his career with the Spurs. And then this past season with the Raptors as a ball dominant force. So both these guys fit immediately with the supporting cast around them as well.
Yeah, you know what? You're onto something there, because I think that we have seen Kawhi emerge as, like you're saying, this system guy, the extension of the Duncan legacy in San Antonio, not about himself, all about his team. And he still very much is that. I mean, you saw what he gave to Toronto this year, and we'll talk a little bit about Toronto in a few minutes. But he goes to Toronto and he becomes pretty much a league icon in a way that I don't think he was in San Antonio. And in this way, and in the way that he is just handled and orchestrated his NBA free agency by waiting a few days, all the other pieces fell, and then this deal orchestrated in a way that I don't ever remember anything this shocking happening in the NBA, to be quite honest. I mean, maybe honestly the last time I felt this way was when Paul George got traded from Indiana to Oklahoma, and that was just is no comparison to what we're seeing here. Kawhi Leonard, not only is he one of the best players in the NBA, he has to be considered one of the real puppet masters of the league now. Am I overstating things? Yeah, but like think about everything that nobody has been able to crack this guy. We had Kendrick Perkins and Chris Carter were pretty much the only whisperers out there, with the exception of maybe Jabari Young from The Athletic, like only guys with any insight. We've gone from the Clippers to he's going to stay in Toronto. No, it's the Lakers. We don't know. And now in the middle of the night on Friday night of the first night of Summer League, this happens.
Yeah, it's shocking. I was thinking earlier today, Chris, before this decision happened from Kawhi, just how, you know, we don't know a lot about him. But the one thing we do know is the fact that he's always been about winning. He himself has always said, he said it during the postseason, he doesn't care about being the best player on a team. He just wants to win. Masai Ujiri said last month at a Basketball Without Borders event that when he first met Kawhi, Kawhi only had two questions for him.
Right.
Are you staying in Toronto? And how will you make this team better? And Ujiri said everything they talked about was just about winning. Every single thing was about winning. And for Kawhi, it's like, yes, we don't know a whole lot about him, but what we do know is he cares about winning. And when you look at his options with Toronto, they were a team that after this season, there was a lot of uncertainty because basically their entire roster was going to hit free agency. Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Kyle Lowry, all in their 30s are going to be unrestricted. Pascal Siakam was going to be a restricted free agent. Fred VanVleet would have been unrestricted. Then you look at the Lakers. Of course they have LeBron James and of course they have Anthony Davis, but the rest of that roster, it looks like it's going to be changing year in, year out because they're going to be signing league minimum guys. It's the Clippers that were the team that offered the stability moving forward. It's just they didn't have the second star, but now they have it with the stability, just with less flexibility moving forward because they gave up so much. But Kawhi ultimately got exactly what he wanted in the sense that he doesn't need to go to have the full circus of the LeBron and the Lakers, but he still has a second star alongside him.
He gets to put his stamp on the league again.
Yep.
Why does he doesn't need LeBron to like step aside or help him cement his leg. Like Kawhi Leonard has already won two rings with two different teams. And now he's in the driver's seat to win a third one with a third team. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like he needed LeBron's stamp of approval here. I have so many questions. Like if Kevin and I sound like we're freaking out, it's because we're freaking out. It's
we are freaking out.
I was just like lying in bed watching Stranger Things when this happened, but now I'm starting to come up with some questions. So I'm just going to ask these they come to me. So Woj had the description of the situation with Oklahoma is essentially, according to Woj, after Leonard pushed George to find a way to get to the Clippers. Okay. I guess contracts don't matter anymore. Paul George approached the team and requested a trade, league sources tell ESPN. OKC was left with no choice and made the best out of a difficult situation. Per sources, what does no choice mean?
And he repeated that a little bit later, too, in saying that Leonard and George met in L.A. earlier in the week. Again, like that they had no choice to make a deal. I don't know what no choice means.
Does that mean I'm not going to suit up for the Thunder next year if you don't trade me to the Clippers?
I mean, maybe he ran out of characters to say it a longer way in the sense that Paul George only has two guaranteed years left on his deal, and then he has a player option. So George can become an unrestricted free agent in 2021. So remember the conversation in Indiana? It was always about the timing of a trade. A year in advance, you're not going to get as much for him. Maybe Oklahoma City was thinking the same thing. If you bring back Paul George for one more season, forcing him to play with Russ and Adams and Robertson in their current core, does the benefits of that and having a chance to make noise in the playoffs outweigh the possibility that then you enter next summer, he's still not happy and he still wants a trade and you're not going to get this massive trade package? To me, it's not about they didn't have a choice. They did have a choice and they chose to essentially reset. The Oklahoma City Thunder took the most massive trade package we have ever seen. The Thunder got more for Paul George than the Pelicans got for Anthony Davis. That's what they chose. It's not that they didn't have a choice. It's that they chose this route, this path, essentially maybe towards rebuilding. I mean, who knows what they're going to do with Russell Westbrook, but now they have a young point guard that they need to develop in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a guy who doesn't really fit next to Russell Westbrook. So I think for the Thunder, they could be in a path towards a rebuild because Russell Westbrook is on that same exact contract that Paul George was, where he can become a free agent.
Dude, I mean, anything is on the table, but I have to tell you, given Oklahoma City's legacy, this does not feel right. This feels a little bit like Harden again. This feels like there were rumors a couple months ago that Thunder wanted to get under the luxury tax, that they did not want to be paying Adams, George, and Russ what they were paying them for a team that was going to wind up as a second round out. And that's what this feels like again. And I believe that Sam Presti is a gifted general manager, and I don't know what kind of financial limitations he is or isn't working with, and I'm just speculating here. But to me, this is malfeasance, man. You can't do what you did to get Paul George. You get that lucky. You went into the playoffs last year. George could barely lift his arm. You have to try again with that team. What are they doing there?
I don't know. To me, this deal, you had to take it. It's like you're getting so many draft picks here. You're getting a really, really talented young player in Gilgeous-Alexander. You're getting a veteran in Gallinari who, you know what, like maybe you play with him and Adams and Westbrook and you run it back until they flame out. Maybe you do that, but you could also flip Gallinari. You could also try to trade Russell Westbrook and go full rebuild here. It's like a shame that it didn't work out with this core. But honestly, man, like I've long felt Russell Westbrook, until his game changes, he's never going to win a championship. And maybe internally with Oklahoma City, they see that there's just an end to this. Maybe they see that there's an end and this was their way out, with just this massive, massive trade package that gives them suddenly Oklahoma City is in a position where they have more flexibility with their assets moving forward than any other team in the NBA.
Because so what do you think we're going to wake up tomorrow night at midnight and find out that they traded Russ to Miami?
I mean, who knows? Can't rule that out. Really can't, can we? I mean, why not? Like, who's to say that another team won't be like, now's our chance to offer a boatload of draft picks in order to get Russell Westbrook, who has three more years left on his deal before he has a non-guarantee for a player option for the fourth year. So this is an opportunity here to at least explore the possibility. If you're Oklahoma City, now is the time to at least listen to offers for Russ, to at least think about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Shams tweeted, rival NBA teams have been aware of the discontent of OKC's two stars, Paul George and Russell Westbrook, league sources tell The Athletic, and Leonard pushed the Clippers in recent days to deliver him a second star, and they did.
Unreal.
That is a light. You can read that two ways. You can read that as Paul George and Russell Westbrook are both have discontent in Oklahoma, or they had discontent with one another. Obviously, if Oklahoma chose to get rid of one of them, at least now, it would suggest that the George Russ duo was not working, even though George, pretty much a year ago today, was like, I'll stay in Oklahoma City because of Russell Westbrook. That was why he did it. So that's the ripple effect for Oklahoma City. We've talked about what this means for the Clippers. We can talk much more about, like, I mean, people who are younger, you guys don't understand, man. This is like the Bad News Bears landing Babe Ruth. This is unbelievable to see the job that the front office and Los Angeles at the Clippers have done to put together the team that they've put together to land these two guys in their prime. And I am in awe of what just happened. But let's talk a little bit about the guys across the hallway from the Clippers. What does this mean for the Lakers?
Well, they are getting Danny Green. They're signing him to a 2-year contract. So that was their plan B with waiting. And that's a nice addition for them, a 3-and-D player in Danny Green. But the same questions we've been talking about the last week or so, Chris, remain. How are they going to fill out the rest of this roster with league minimum guys? What are the decisions that they're going to make in order to build a complete team around around LeBron James and Anthony Davis? Right now, like there's not a lot out there. They've already signed Jared Dudley and, of course, Danny Green. But for the Lakers, from a big picture perspective, like this is not the first time that LeBron has had a star player pass on him. With AD, there's a lot of the clutch element there and bringing AD to Los Angeles. But now this is 2 years in a row now with Paul George deciding to stay with Oklahoma City and then with Kawhi Leonard deciding to do it his own way with the Clippers. I think there's something to what has been written about by, I think maybe it was Rick Bucher at Bleacher Report or Howard Beck.
Yeah.
I apologize. I forget who it was, but there I've heard similar rumblings where guys are hesitant to play with LeBron. And, you know, it's a little thing, but I can remember a time last season with LeBron in LA, and there was one time JaVale McGee came out of the showers and like there was just a whole bunch of media members standing inside his locker, and he's just like mumbling the F word under his breath, annoyed, constantly like saying it over and over again, just annoyed at someone was in his way. And he asked the media member politely, can you please get out of the way? And the media member really had nowhere to go. And JaVale McGee sat in the locker next to his own locker and was visibly frustrated by it until he walked out. And there's other instances like that as well, where it's like those little things over time, I think, add up, and players know that. Players talk to each other about that. So with playing with LeBron, there's the on-court element, but there's the off-court circus. There's the locker room circus as well, where I'm sure Kawhi knows all about that, and he probably doesn't want to deal with that. And now he's going to have like half the media attention with the Clippers, as is Paul George going there, that the Lakers and LeBron are going to have. And so for them, for the Lakers, this was really their final opportunity to sign a star player in free agency. And now they don't have the assets to go get that player, man, through trade either.
Arash has already tweeted about how they felt blindsided, yes, by Kawhi, but especially by the Paul George thing. And that felt like they feel a little bit taken aback by that. And now Dave McMenamin is saying that the Lakers are having conversation with the likes of Rajon Rondo, JaVale McGee, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope about coming back to the team. I mean, look, this is such a high leverage, high risk gamble that these two LA teams took. But the Clippers, ultimately, if they had to fall back to being this sort of scrappy underdog LA team with a fun young core and a great coach and like Lou Williams as a team icon, they could have done that. And they could have wound up at the 7 or 8 seed and everybody would have been like, great job, Clippers. See who you can get in 2020 or 2021. The Lakers were not playing that game, man. The Lakers have AD on this year. And while I cannot imagine a single possibility that Rich Paul would not deliver AD to the Lakers, and that's apparently where AD wants to be, they are now in a really, really, really tight spot with an aging LeBron, AD on the Lakers, and that's it, man. They traded the whole team for this guy, and they were really counting on this third star.
To be fair, the Lakers are still in great shape. They have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I mean, they are in great shape regardless of the other changes that matter. I mean, like everybody's, I mean, there's some stuff out there about LeBron's not a top 4, top 5 player anymore. He still is. When he's on, when he's healthy, when he's trying, he still is a top 5 player. And Anthony Davis is the best young big man in today's game. So for the Lakers, it was a necessary risk in waiting for Kawhi Leonard, and for Anthony Davis, it was a necessary move to make, because for AD, you're not just investing in the next 3 years of LeBron James, you're investing in beyond that. When LeBron is gone, when LeBron is old, whatever the case may be, AD is somebody that they hope can be part of the franchise for a long, long time. For the next 10 years, they would hope. But for the next 3 years, you're right. It's tight. We don't know when LeBron James' decline will begin. We don't. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. It happens for everybody. For some players, it takes a long, long time for it to come. And maybe that'll be the case for LeBron, where we have peak LeBron for the next 3 years. But it's tight, because there's no guarantee of that. No player is immortal. And so for the Lakers, they suddenly don't have a path to finding that next guy unless somebody pops, unless Kuzma continues ascending and becomes a star player. But that's unlikely. So for the Lakers, this is what you are. This is what you are until maybe next summer, when maybe some of these short-term contracts come up, and then you're able to take a swing on another mid-level.
But they can't trade for Bradley Beal, and they can't trade, you know, they're out of that kind of, like, they spent all the assets that they had to get somebody like that. And the thing was, with Kawhi coming, or player X, whoever that superstar, third superstar is supposed to be with LeBron and Anthony Davis, is I think that, as we saw with Toronto this year, if you really want your stars to be in the best possible shape going into the playoffs, you need to manage their load during the season. I have mixed feelings about, like, taking, like, the sort of prescribed load management stuff. Like, I think sometimes it's overblown, and we don't have to get into a conversation about that right now. But I do think that that was one of the major deals with the third star, was, hey, let's ease the load on LeBron. Let's get him down around 29 minutes a game, right? Let's play him 62, 65 games a year rather than 77 at 36 minutes a game chasing an MVP award. This was supposed to be about sustainability. And now, I think there's a little bit more pressure on that duo to make things happen faster. So regardless of that, yes, the Lakers will still be a contender. The Clippers will be a contender. Kendrick Perkins tweeting right now at 11:34 on Friday night. I still can't believe we're recording a podcast at 11:34 on Friday night. Kendrick Perkins tweeting, I would not be surprised if Russ gets traded. Sounds like OKC is throwing in the towel. This ain't over. Something is about to happen in OKC. Clay Bennett didn't want to pay the luxury tax. So that goes back to what we were saying before. This has echoes of the Harden trade. It just has a bad feeling of, like, this team sort of having a financial ceiling to their ambitions. And you have to wonder, I mean, just completely spontaneously off the top of my head here, if Sam Presti turns around and just says, you know what, I'll go be the GM in Washington, D.C. That's okay. You know what I mean?
You can never rule anything out in the NBA, apparently, right?
Sam Presti and I've had to give up, if I've lost Kevin Durant and had to trade James Harden and Paul George over the last 10 years, I think I might prefer watching John Wall learn how to walk again, frankly, just if I were him.
They still have Russell Westbrook.
Yes, I know. So, okay, let's talk a little more, some ripple effects here. Let's see. So let's talk about the team that Kawhi is leaving. Let's talk about Toronto. A real feel-good story, obviously. Like, they now are in a really interesting crossroads. They had their a few weeks of celebration. I wish it could have lasted longer. It was inspiring, frankly, even as a Sixers fan. I thought it was really heartwarming and awesome to see a team be able to break up the kind of inevitability of the Warriors, even if it was under some tough circumstances for Golden State. What happens next for Toronto?
Well, I'm not sure exactly if Toronto is going to go in a full rebuild here, but we've talked about this before. I've talked about it with Verno a lot over the years. Masai Ujiri, ever since he got hired in 2013, has wanted to rebuild. He tried to trade Kyle Lowry. He couldn't get it done. He explored the trade market for DeMar DeRozan. There's nothing out there, until it just so happened San Antonio had a player who only played 9 games, who demanded a trade, who wanted out, his value in the market wasn't there, and they traded Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors for Jakob Poeltl and DeMar DeRozan, and they won a championship. Like, what a story. It's amazing that Toronto ended up winning the title. It's improbable. But now they enter a scenario where, like we alluded to earlier, Lowry, Gasol, Ibaka, Van Vliet, and Siakam are all free agents next summer. So for Kawhi, he looked at this situation and he saw a 1-year window. You could have come back and had a chance at repeating, but after that, Who really knows what would have happened with this Toronto roster with such an old core with Lowry, Gasol, and Ibaka, and then with Van Vliet and Siakam, two guys who are really good, but are going to get paid a lot of money. Van Vliet's going to get Brogdon money, and Siakam's probably going to get the max. And so for Kawhi, it wasn't as appealing as going to the Clippers. And for Masai Ujiri, in assessing this team, I do think there's at least some logic to maybe seeing what's out there for Gasol during the season. Maybe you try to play be competitive, because I do have some good young players with Siakam and Ananobi and Van Vliet. You don't have to go full rebuild, blow it up mode, but I think exploring the market and you know, going into a retooling period makes a lot of sense for you, Jerry.
There's so much market volatility. Cause like, if you look at, I'm looking at the teams right now and I'm saying, are there more sellers than there are buyers? If Toronto becomes a seller, if DC is getting in, if DC starts testing the market for Beal, if Oklahoma City starts testing the market for Westbrook and or Adams, where are all the huge asset collections going to come from to pay for these guys? I guess that's going to be one of the more fascinating storylines as we go forward over the next few weeks, because we did see the Knicks. Okay.
I mean,
talk to me about this. I didn't even, this is where I'm at. I'm not even seeing this stuff.
I mean, like, I just can't. Well, first of all, there's not many teams that need a point guard. So in regards to Lowry or Westbrook, especially Westbrook in that case, if you're the Knicks, maybe you look for Russell Westbrook as your star to be the face of the franchise moving forward, as your guy who can lure in other free agents. There's not a lot of teams that need a point guard, though, and they're one of them. So for Lowry and Westbrook, there's not many homes for them, especially because Memphis just traded Mike Conley to Utah, one of the few teams that did need a point guard. So it's nice to say that you want to rebuild and that you want to trade your stars or whatever, or your aging players like Marc Gasol, but you need to find a home for those guys. And there would be a market for Gasol or Ernie Ibaka, but it's hard to find value for Westbrook making $40 million or Lowry making $35 million this coming season. It's a lot harder to find trades for those guys that make that amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is also, I feel really bad for Raptors fans because
me too.
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's going to be like a Marlins rebuild where the Marlins would win the World Series and then just completely dissemble the team. This was done against their will, obviously, but I do wonder whether they strip it down and decide to build around Siakam and Ananobi. Although I would say that I think a Siakam and Ananobi led Raptors team with Gasol and Lowry is probably like a 4 seed.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I don't look. I really like Siakam. I really, really like him. And it's nice that we're going to get to see him in a position now where he's going to have more responsibility and maybe he grows into that role. But I still want to put them over the Bucks or the Sixers or the revamped Pacers or maybe even the Celtics, depending on what else happens there.
Yeah.
For them, like they're five
or
six.
The Nets. Yeah. Or the Nets.
Yeah. Or the Nets, yeah, with Kyrie. Yeah. 6 or 7 maybe in the East. And like it sucks, but for Toronto, they're the greatest one-hit wonder in history. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. This is a team that, like you said, Chris, they still have good players. And they could trade their veteran guys and still have a core with a path towards success moving forward, especially because of Pascal Siakam with what he is, because of what this franchise showed this last year with this fan base in this country that got behind them. I think for Toronto, they showed a lot that can make them an appealing franchise for that 2021 free agent class. Because everybody, like someone tweeted me earlier tonight, what does this mean for small market franchises? You know, you have Paul George demanding a trade from Oklahoma City. You have Kawhi Leonard leaving Toronto. Well, Toronto's not a small market. It's one of the biggest markets in the league, actually. It's one of the biggest markets in the world. So
it's for Toronto, a national market. It's just a Canadian national market.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they can become a destination franchise, especially 2021, a year in which the Lakers and the Clippers and maybe the Nets and maybe the Knicks, the Knicks and the Raptors are going to be the two teams that are these big market destinations. So for the Raptors, now I think it's just about building forward, building for 21, building for 22.
And look, like you can definitely be mad at Kawhi Leonard, but he gave you something that you'll never forget. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that guy got traded to Toronto by San Antonio. That was not his choice. It was his choice to enter free agency. It's free agency for a reason. He gets to choose where he wants to play. And all credit to him, because it turns out Kawhi Leonard honestly knows a lot more about team building than I do, because he was able to orchestrate this deal. I guess I have two more questions before we stop here. One is, what do you think that this trade says about player power? Because you and I were chatting briefly on text before we got on the mic, and I feel like if we're in a place where Paul George can just go up to Sam Presti and Clay Bennett and say, look, this is not only do I want to leave, but this is where I want to go, make it happen. This is starting to just feel a lot more like Paul Pogba walks into a Manchester United dressing room and says, I want to go to Juventus, or I want to go to Real Madrid, make it happen. This, what do you do? Are 2 years left on a contract not significant enough to actually have the control over the player that you need to build the team around them?
Or not having cap space, like we just saw with the Miami Heat acquiring Jimmy Butler. They were able to create cap space out of nothing. They looked like a team that was locked into their roster for years, but they've still managed to get Jimmy Butler on a max contract. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it certainly does mean the continuation of what we've seen for the last decade or so. The players are in control and they can get what they want in that sense. And that's a great thing. Really, I'm enjoying the era of player movement. I know Colin Cowherd had a nice rant on The Herd earlier this week where he's like, this is the evolution of parity, where player movement creates parity. You have star players changing teams all the time, so the contenders are always changing. I don't necessarily totally agree with that, but it makes a bit of sense to me, because we're just seeing these teams, like now Oklahoma City goes from a team that actually has maybe a shot to make some noise in this wide open league to a team that's maybe on the verge of a full rebuild. Toronto goes from a middling team that runs up against the LeBron wall in the playoffs every year to winning a title, and now they're facing a rebuild. Teams are constantly going from contender to rebuilding all the time. But for players, Chris, I don't know exactly, because the thing is like, it's not like Oklahoma City got nothing in return here because Paul George requested a trade. They
Mark
got everything.
Stein has the details. Yeah, they have 3 unprotected first round picks from the Clippers in this trade, 2022, 2024, and 2026, plus 2 firsts from Miami, the 2021 unprotected,
wow,
and 2023
wow,
unprotected. The 2023 is protected 1-14, and the right to swap picks with the Clippers in 2023 and 2025.
Wow.
So
unreal.
That's wow, amazing. So they essentially rebooted the franchise. I have to imagine with the late
unreal
hour and when this is happening, I just really want to know what Russell Westbrook is thinking right now. It's fascinating to me. And I also think that, you know, Kevin, we're talking about this parity, and we're talking about what if there's a lot of transactional, if there's a lot of turnover among superstars and you're creating parity in the league, it's not necessarily that erodes fan relationships with teams, which is an idea that I was kind of like chewing on earlier in the week. I think what it does is it just goes counter to the league's legacy of dynastic teams. It's going to be harder and harder to put together a 5 NBA title winning team, even over the course of 10 years, 12 years, than it was back in, say, the 80s or the 90s, when you had a Lakers, a Celtics, and a Bulls sort of running the table for such a long period of time.
Is this something the NBA needs to solve? Or is it just like, let it be the way it is, where players, you know,
I don't think you can put the
genie
back in the bottle. I don't think you can say all of a sudden, like, I mean, I think what we'll see is maybe the general managers are going to have to adjust to the whims of players. Maybe this means that we're going to start seeing a lot more short-term contracts. Maybe we're going to start seeing longer contracts for younger players to try to lock them in for more years. I don't really know how the league could all of a sudden turn around in a post-LeBron era and say, yeah, player movement on this level with this kind of volatility. I mean, you know, you'd have to imagine that anybody who had maybe renewed their season tickets in Oklahoma are going to be making some phone calls right now.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the thing that's where you start to see trickle down effects in small markets. And that's where you start to see the ripple effects. And I don't think that there's anything Adam Silver can do about this. I just think that it's going to have a larger impact than just like, sick, you love to see it, Clippers. Like, this is going to be a major thing that the league is going to have to wrap its hands around.
I know, especially from the small market perspective. because you do have all these stars flooding to big markets, except for the Knicks. And we'll see about that in the future.
Yeah, the only two places people don't want to play, apparently, are Lakers and Knicks. So I guess the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Unless you're a clutch client.
Yes, right. All right, let's kind of like bring the plane down a little bit here. What are some of your final thoughts as we've been kind of talking through our reactions for 35 minutes? I think that my big one is really more shoes are going to drop from this. It'll be interesting to see how Rob Pelinka survives this, what LeBron's reaction is to this, what Sam Presti's response and statements are about this on Sunday, how Russell Westbrook feels about this, how Toronto feels about this, what this does to the rest of the league. Because right now, I think the Clippers obviously have just made themselves Western Conference favorites, if not heavy, heavy contenders. But I think that it's almost going to be more fascinating to see how this trade impacts the rest of the league for months and years to come.
For me, it's always try to think outside the box when it comes to rumors like this, because the hints were there. The hint this time with Paul George was that Kawhi talked to Kevin Durant about trying to team up with him. So that was an indication of one thing for sure, that Kawhi Leonard desired a relationship with another superstar player on a team. And it also hinted at the possibility that the preference was not with the Lakers. If he was looking for Kevin Durant to sign up to join forces with him, it at least was an indication that maybe the Lakers weren't the preference. So when it comes to that, I was thinking like, oh, well, maybe he could there could be a mystery team. Maybe he could try to look at another team like the Warriors or whatever and do some sign and trade there to get there. But that didn't happen, of course. But it was actually just a mystery player in the sense with Paul George. So when it comes to all these rumors and everything that's ever out there from Woj and Stein and whoever else, you got to read between the lines and start thinking it like in the way a team does. So for the Clippers, it was like, for Kawhi as well, it's what is the next guy that they have to acquire in order to get this guy? So with this trade, they gave up everything. It's not just for Paul George, though. It was also for Kawhi and Leonard. So that's really my main thought here is like these
right.
teams.
So this is
so
like
creatively.
A massive. Yeah, it's if you're having sticker shock at what they gave the Thunder, think about it also in terms of what they gave the league, basically, or the basketball gods for Kawhi Leonard and the Thunder. I'm sure Masai would have been like, can we do a sign and trade or something? If you guys are feeling so generous.
But you know what? It's worth it because now they are built for sustained contention for the next 5+ years, assuming these guys don't demand trades at some point.
Right. Right. That's what the Thunder are essentially counting on, right? Is that maybe in 3 years or whatever, when Kawhi Leonard decides to just, I don't know, be the first great basketball player on the moon or something, that these picks will start to sort of really pay dividends. But it's fascinating to see them play the long game like this. I don't know what's going to happen to Thunder. The more that we talk about it, the more I'm fascinated with that. What a coup for the Clippers, man. I can't believe the Clippers did this. They have two of the best 7-6-7 players in the NBA all around.
Yeah, and one of the best benches as well. They have Lou Williams, sixth man of the year, with Montrezl Harrell, his partner in crime in the pick and roll. So for the Clippers, they have the supporting cast around these two stars. And the other part of it, though, Chris, is like, I think it also shows the importance of having organizational alignment top to bottom. This team from Steve Ballmer and the ownership with Lawrence Frank in the front office and all the guys that they kept, all the guys that they hired, with Doc Rivers on the coaching staff down to the players. They are an organization that has one goal and the same objectives moving forward. And there are so many teams across the league where front offices have one idea of how to build and the coaching staff has another, and ownership doesn't want to make the risks necessary that the front office does. You have all this dysfunction across the league, but the Clippers suddenly, from the Donald Sterling days to what they are now, are one of the model franchises in sports. And it's because they have an organization with aligned goals. And that's what was appealing to Kawhi Leonard and ultimately to Paul George. So for this team, they serve as an example for the rest of the league that, guess what? If something's wrong in your organization, maybe it starts with the owner and that's not something you can solve. But if it is something the owner can solve, finding the right people in your organization can create a situation for you to make moves like this, getting Kawhi Leonard and getting Paul George.
Well, it still terrifies me, by the way, that they did not include Landry Shamet in this trade, because it makes me feel like Jerry West thinks he's the reincarnation of Ray Allen. So let's hope that's not the case for Sixers fans' sakes. Kevin, thank you so much for pulling the late shift with me here. Isaac, thank you for... Oh, my God. We didn't even ask Isaac what he thinks.
Yeah, let's end with Isaac on the happiest of happy
Isaac,
notes.
You take us out, man.
Yeah, sure. I am in a state of total euphoria. I have never felt this happy in my life. I feel adrenaline in my joints right now. It's incredible. I honestly don't even know how to process it. This whole time, I'm like trying to pay attention. I'm trying to produce the show. But I'm also like in my head, I'm just like... Championships, Clip City, Chip City, championships, championships. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
I'm sincerely so happy for you, man. Mm. I'm happy for all Clippers fans. I'm sorry for Raptors fans. I'm sorry for Thunder fans. I'm excited for NBA fans because it's going to be a season unlike any we've had in a very, very long time, if not ever. We'll have plenty of stuff on TheRinger.com and plenty of stuff on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm sure Bill will do something very shortly. We'll have more pods. We'll have more reactions. Isaac, thank you for recording us tonight. Kevin, thank you for calling. All right, guys, can we start the season tomorrow?